friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and our next guest is Nat Hentoff. He is a renowned expert on our dearly departed Bill of Rights and has written many books on jazz, biographies, free speech, and even children's books. He penned a column for the New Yorker magazine for 25 years. He now writes about jazz for the Wall Street Journal and the Liberty Beat column for the Village Voice. Welcome to the show, sir.
Well, thank you, sir.
It's an honor to have you on. And I want to start us off with this little news story here. I had this from the San Francisco Chronicle.
Sir, I need a little more volume on your end.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
All right, there we go. Let me talk right into that microphone. I have from the San Francisco Chronicle. Yesterday, the Pentagon has determined that four more prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, no longer pose much of a threat and plan to release them. So my question then, does that mean that these guys were innocent and held for no reason all along?
You know, the large majority of the ones that were originally picked up there, many of them were taken off by the Northern Alliance in Afghanistan. And the Northern Alliance is a bunch of people who sold them for money, for bounties from the United States. They, you know, not one has been charged with a crime as we consider a crime in our country. So a lot, they're now releasing a lot of them, but they're keeping others. And what's going on at Guantanamo is the Supreme Court made it very clear in June of last year. You've got to give them due process. The hearings now, using the term very loosely, are totally devoid of due process. They cannot hear the evidence against them. When they now finally have some lawyers, the lawyers can't get the evidence against them. So this is part of the continuing deterioration of what we claim to call our rule of law.
And interestingly, the Supreme Court, I guess the military was smart and they let Hamdi go before his case got to the Supreme Court, and he's now safely back in Saudi Arabia, so apparently he wasn't.
No, actually, Hamdi was not released until he won that case in the Supreme Court.
Oh, really?
And that's the case where Sandra Day O'Connor, who is now leaving, said to George W. Bush, "You don't have a blank check in the name of national security."
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that they had released him before it went to the court.
No. He was still down in that Navy brig.
But even then, they didn't go and take him before a judge for his habeas corpus. They went ahead and let him go rather than let him tell a story to a judge.
Because the evidence against him was so thin. He came before a judge in, Virginia, a district court judge named, I think it was Dumas. An old-style judge, he was appointed by Ronald Reagan, and the Justice Department sent a guy, and he said, "We can't tell you much about what our evidence is because it might endanger national security," but he gave the judge a two-page report. The judge took it into his chambers, looked at it, and said, "Is that all you have? Don't you realize we have a constitution?" So he was shipped off because if they ever brought him into court, the farce that was the case against him would have fallen apart.
Right, and remember, everyone, this guy Hamdi was born in Louisiana. He was an American.
Well, that's the point. The Supreme Court decision had to do with whether the president and his advisors, including Alberto Gonzalez, who is now our attorney general and is supposedly our chief law enforcement officer, his advisors said to Bush, "Now look, this is a war. You're the commander-in-chief. You are not bound by any kind of judges." And what the Supreme Court said to him in that case, the Hamdi case in June 1994, "You are bound by the law. No president is above the law." And he's a slow learner because, I don't know if you know, you must know this. In the past week, there has finally been some information out of Italy.
I'm sorry, Mr. Hentoff. We're going to hold that till we get back from this break. There are all heartbreaks here. We'll be right back with Nat Hentoff from the Village Voice on the Weekend Interview Show.
When it's time to change, you won't know how. It's one bad idea from now.
All right, my friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton, and I'm talking with Nat Hentoff. He writes Liberty Beat for the Village Voice. And I'm sorry, sir, when I cut you off for that commercial break, you were beginning to say something that began with just last week.
Just last week, the news finally came out, though not far enough. The media is still asleep by and large, but the New York Times and the Washington Post have been covering this, and I'm going to do a series on it for The Voice and the syndicate I write for. An Italian judge has issued arrest warrants for 13 CIA agents who in 2003 kidnapped off the streets of Milan a radical imam and took him to his native Egypt, flew him there, where he was held for 14 months and was tortured. And this is part of something that's been going on since Bill Clinton's administration. It's called Extraordinary Renditions. That means the CIA, which has special rules under George W. Bush as well as Bill Clinton, is able to take terrorism suspects, and they want to crack them, and they want to send them to a place that will torture them, get the information out of them, and that's what they do. And so far, the Republican-controlled Congress refuses to have an independent inquiry into this whole procedure. Jay Rockefeller of West Virginia tried to get it through the Senate Intelligence Committee. Pat Roberts, the Republican chairman, refused. The Attorney General, Mr. Gonzalez, has been asked by the American Civil Liberties Union and all kinds of other people, let's look into this. It violates international law. It violates the covenant on torture that this country ratified, and it also violates our own 1998 statute to implement the Convention Against Torture, which says that we cannot send people to countries that torture them.
Yes, but Mr. Hentoff, isn't Alberto Gonzalez the guy who instructed George W. Bush that if only he draw up a finding that he determines that the rule of law doesn't apply to these people, then it doesn't?
That's one of the things Alberto Gonzalez did when he was a very busy counsel to the president. He also was the orchestrator of what are called the torture memos, which said, you know, the CIA, we've just been talking about the CIA. The CIA went to Donald Rumsfeld at the the Defense Department and said, you know, we have to crack these prisoners. Now, we want to know what we can do so we don't get prosecuted. And Gonzalez and some other people in the Justice Department worked out memos that said, well, we won't call it torture. It's not torture, but it is torture. And it's interesting, a lot of the people involved in that have since been promoted. The worst memo was written by a man named Jay Bybee. He is now a judge on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. There was another one just as bad by John Yoo. He's now a professor at the University of California Law School. And the third one was Jack Goldsmith, who is now a professor at Harvard Law School. And Alberto Gonzalez, if I had a bet on who's going to be the replacement for Sandra Day O'Connor, I would think it'll be Alberto Gonzalez. So if that's the case, we will have this man who has shown no respect for the rule of law on the Supreme Court of the United States.
Well, and you mentioned Jay Bybee's memo, the guy who's a federal judge now. It was his memo that said, oh, you can torture them as long as they don't have major organ failure, right?
Or die.
Oh, yeah. Okay, you can't torture them all the way to death.
Yeah.
Okay. I wonder if ripping somebody's fingernails out or putting a screw in their knee counts as major organ failure. I guess not.
Well, you see, once you start drawing lines that are made up of you can't draw them because they're made of sand, you can do anything you like. And that's what's been happening. There is now coming out of Guantanamo a report by Physicians for Human Rights. It's 136 pages, and it has to do with the psychological torture as well as the physical torture of the inmates at Guantanamo. And now there is, in fact, I'm writing about it this week, there is a study put out pardon me, in the New England Journal of Medicine. Now, that's a very prestigious medical journal in the United States. And that indicates that contrary to medical ethics, doctors and psychologists, military doctors, psychologists, and psychiatrists at Gitmo have been telling the interrogators the medical records of the people they're interrogating. Also, what is it in their private lives that might make them susceptible to, let us say, coercive interrogation? What are they afraid of? What can we do to break them?
Life Room 101. This is straight out of 1984, right? You just put a cage with a rat in it on their head.
George Orwell was a prophet. Now, this is contrary not only to the law, that's a violation of the Convention Against Torture, too, but it's a violation of American medical ethics, and I'm waiting for the American Medical Association to say something about this. Now, there was a, I would recommend this to your readers. In the July 1st Washington Post, on the op-ed page, there was an article called The Torture Stain. It was written by a doctor. He was George H.W. Bush's doctor, physician, at the White House during George H.W. Bush's presidency. It is such a passionate denunciation of what's been going on at Guantanamo with this total collapse of medical ethics. And the guy at the end practically begs the other doctors to rise up and speak about this. Now, I have not seen anybody in the media, I may have missed it, pick up this. I mean, that's news. Here's the former physician at the White House to George W. Bush's father, and he said at the beginning of the article, because of my respect for the military, because of my respect for this country, I've got to tell you about this, and let's do something about it.
Yeah,
but I bet you that Congress is not going to move because it is totally structured and and I'll tell you one other thing. Where is the Democratic Party leadership? All the things we've been talking about, Harry Reid hardly ever mentions them. Nancy Pelosi doesn't mention them. Howard Dean doesn't mention them. There are some very alert Democrats in the Senate, Pat Leahy on the Judiciary Committee, Dick Durbin. But in terms of the Democrats who speak for the party, they're asleep.
No, I mean, Hillary Clinton has been doing everything she can to attack Bush from the right on every issue, particularly on immigration.
Yeah, now, the two senators from my state are Hillary Rodham Clinton and a guy who has a very big mouth and likes to get into the newspapers, Chuck Schumer. He has not said one word about this stuff.
Well, you know, it's funny. They don't listen to Ray McGovern, who used to be George Bush Sr.'s CIA briefer. Why would they listen to his doctor?
Well, the point is, this, we need an opposition party that will finally awaken the media itself and many American people, although there's a lot of resistance out there. The Bill of Rights Defense Committee in Northampton now reports that there are at least, it must be close to 400 cities and towns, and I think six state legislatures that have passed Bill of Rights defense resolutions telling their congressmen, look, this is still a constitutional democracy. You've got to do something. And I was thinking there might be some changes in the Patriot Act before it sunsets in December, because there is not only people on the liberals in Congress, but some of the really conservative libertarian senators, Republican senators, have joined in a coalition. But I'm beginning to think that after what happened in London, how many people are going to have the basic courage in the Senate, and it shouldn't take any courage, to continue to make sure that some of the worst parts of the Patriot Act are abolished.
It's going to be very few. After all, only one senator voted against it in the first place.
Now, let me tell you a quick story about that. Many people don't know about it. The senator was Russell Feingold of Wisconsin. When he came down to the floor the night of the vote, and many senators hadn't even had a chance to read it all, but Tom Daschle, who was then the Senate Minority Leader, had a caucus of the Democratic senators and said, do not join Russ Feingold. We want this bill to go through so we won't be called soft on communism. It's another example of the so-called leadership of the Democratic Party.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny how interchangeable communism and terrorism are, right? Just, whatever, well, as long as it's an enemy with an ism, let's fight it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the main thing is, and this is what the administration has counted on, so many Americans do not learn in school much about why they're Americans, what it took to get our constitutional rights, what it took to keep them throughout our history. I saw a very important survey that indicated that in most middle schools and high schools, they get only one course before they graduate in what's called civics. So that's why you see people on Jay Leno who are asked the most simple questions. They don't even know who their senators and congressmen are.
Well, sure, and they're learning civics from a government school, which is definitely not going to emphasize responsibility and liberty.
But this has been going on since I was in school. I had to learn all this stuff by reading outside of school. It's something that educators have been remiss in for many, many, many years.
All right, my friends, it's the Weekend Interview Show. I'm talking with Nat Hentoff. He's a renowned expert on the Bill of Rights. He writes Liberty Beat for the Village Voice, and we'll be right back after this break. Friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton, and I'm talking with Nat Hentoff. He writes the column Liberty Beat for the Village Voice, and his book is called The War on the Bill of Rights. And on my website, weekendinterviewshow.com, as soon as this interview is posted up there, I'll have a link where you can get his book from Amazon.com. Now, in the last few minutes here, sir, one of the most dangerous, if not the most controversial, provisions of the USA Patriot Act passed after September 11th allows for the issuance of administrative warrants and subpoenas.
You read my mind. I was about to talk about that.
Right. In your recent column, it's called FBI Turned Loose. Everybody Google that. You say that the Senate Intelligence Committee has passed a bill that would expand this power. So what exactly is an administrative subpoena? And
that means that
under
this bill, if it becomes law, and it will certainly be signed by Bush enthusiastically if it gets through the Senate, the FBI already has this in a very limited way, which most people don't know about. This will greatly expand its power to write its own subpoenas. They don't go to a judge. They just write them, like the British troops used to do in the before the Revolutionary War. And that means they can go to any kind of institution, a medical institution, educational institution, credit card company, and get your personal records because they say it might be involved with terrorism or at least national security. You won't know that they have the records. The only people who will know, obviously, are the people they go to with the subpoena. And then there's a gag rule. The people who get the subpoenas are not allowed to say that the FBI has come. And if, as I am afraid now, I hope I'm wrong, enough people in Congress agree to not sunset anything in the Patriot Act, and you can be sure that the President and the Attorney General and Robert Mueller, the head of the FBI, will be pushing from now until December, oh, we need this. We need this for national security. Look what happened in London. Unless people write to their members of Congress and say, remember, there is a separation of powers, and we are part of a constitutional democracy.
So these administrative warrants, this is basically one cop gets a warrant from another cop, and then it's a secret warrant.
No, what it means is, it's not one cop and another cop. The FBI writes the warrant, the FBI executes the warrant, and contrary to what the president has been saying since 9/11, and first John Ashcroft and now Gonzales, they always say whatever we do is going to be within the bounds of the Constitution, and there's always a judge, judicial review. They never go to a judge here. It's the FBI is the judge.
Okay, so but my mistake was in thinking that the FBI at least had to ask, I don't know, the U.S. Attorney's Office or something,
no.
But not even that.
No. FBI isn't totally in charge of this.
Okay, now when I talked to Bob Barr almost a year ago, He talked about these administrative subpoenas. So this is already part of Patriot Act. To what degree are they trying to expand it?
That's it. This is an expansion. And by the way, Bob Barr is a great civil libertarian. I knew this even when he was in Congress. And under Bill Clinton, they wanted to put in those roving wiretaps that Ashcroft takes for credit for, where you don't have to go to a judge in each jurisdiction. You get one wiretap, and it goes all over the country. Bob Barr was the only congressman who argued against it on the floor, and he lost.
Yeah, and then it's a real shame, too, because it was the libertarians that turned on him in Georgia and drove him out of office on the drug war issue when he's... on our side on so many important issues.
In terms of civil liberties, he was the most valuable member of Congress.
Yeah, that's probably true. And he's not as hardcore on civil liberties as Ron Paul, but he probably did have a lot more effect.
Ron Paul is an institution unto himself. I admire him a lot. And we also share something that makes us heretics to a lot of people. We're pro-life, and I'm an atheist, too, but I am also, along with Ron Paul, pro-life.
Well, and you know what? Speaking of that, and I know that that's probably why you're not king of the liberals in New York for that one issue.
Well, neither side likes me.
Well, you know, and this goes back real quickly to the Democrats and what failures they are at being the opposition to the Republican state. I read a quote on something off of Google News, lifenews.com this morning, quoted the Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid as saying he's absolutely fine with Alberto Gonzalez for a justice on the Supreme Court. He has no problem with it at all.
Well, Harry, you know, I mentioned Russ Feingold, who is still a great civil libertarian, but Gonzalez is now using a charm campaign. He's much more nicer than Ashcroft was. And even Russ Feingold said, well, the atmosphere is better now. We can talk to him. That doesn't mean anything if he's doing the same things Ashcroft did, and he's actually worse on civil liberties than Ashcroft. And if he gets to the Supreme Court, what are the Democrats going to do? They've already gone over his record when he was confirmed for Attorney General, and I don't think they'll have the votes.
Well, and, you know, with all the rumors of Rehnquist leaving, too, I mean, that gives Gonzalez pretty much a 99% chance, even if they skip him over for O'Connor's spot.
Yeah, and this guy has been the most loyal person who ever worked for George W. Bush. And you know, I can't prove anything, but I was very interested when he showed up last Sunday in the surprise visit to Baghdad. Now, Sandra Day O'Connor resigned on Friday. With all their resources, it would be possible for him to get a quick free plane trip that's in time. And that raised his visibility. It gave him an aura of, you know, being a patriot and all that. So if my supposition, and that's all it is correct, that's an indicator that Bush does want to put him on the court.
Yep, sounds like a big PR move right there. All right, thank you very much for your time today, sir. Nat Hentoff, everybody, writes for the Village Voice.
Well, thank you for asking me to come on.